his arms are open wide.
This is WCNO Palm City, the good news station.
Welcome to the Religious Liberty Report, a weekly news briefing on religious liberty news, a program hoping to educate, encourage, support, and equip you, our listeners, on important issues of our day, but always approaching the issues from a biblical worldview.
You're tuned into the Religious Liberty Report, Alexander Alfano reporting, in this third week of February, 2025. If you're new to the Religious Liberty Report, we are a Christian legal ministry hoping to help equip you with tools to take your faith to the culture, to better understand, articulate your Christian worldview in a way that is courteous, kind, yet bold and uncompromising. And yes, always committed to God's Word as our guide. We are a culture grappling with important moral issues. Thank you for the honor of addressing you on this report. The church is called to be the moral, the cultural conscience of the nation. We cannot and must not stay on the sidelines and let the culture do its own thing. The Religious Liberty Report, working to help equip you with tools to take your faith to the culture. The idea, brothers and sisters, is not to win debates, but to win hearts, minds, and souls. We are in a culture of confusion. No points of reference. Objective facts, divine truth, are routinely subordinated to emotion, opinion, and personal beliefs. I want to talk about something that is both current and also relevant to the church. We know that with the new administration, President Trump and the Department of Homeland Security won't ban immigration arrests at churches. How are we to respond? How are we to interpret this? How are clergy to respond to these new policies regarding churches and the undocumented? Numerous faith leaders across the United States are paying attention to what some are calling an immigration crackdown launched by President Donald Trump's new administration. Much of this is sowing fear in the migrant community and in some migrant-friendly congregations. How should churches, how should congregations, ministers, ministries, how should we interpret the changes in policy? Questions being made regarding a new policy from the Department of Homeland Security that immigration authorities can now enter schools, healthcare facilities, and yes, places of worship to conduct arrests. How should pastors, churches, and congregations interpret this? Warnings from the federal government that houses of worship are not off limits for immigration arrests. A DHS spokesman said in a statement, quote, criminals will no longer be able to hide in American schools, America's churches, to avoid arrest. The DHS spokesman went on to say that the Trump administration will not tie the hands of our brave law enforcement, and instead trust them to use common sense. A new directive from the Department of Homeland Security, covering agents from the Immigration and Customs Enforcement to Customs and Border Protection, rescinding or reversing guidance from the previous Biden administration that had respected, acknowledged, quote, protected areas. Mostly areas where, quote, children gather, or where there are disaster or emergency relief sites, or even social services establishments. And, of course, places of worship. under a guideline mandated that immigration enforcement operations should not and could not take place in or near locations that would limit people's access to, quote, essential services or activities. One traditional rule is that courthouses are exempt from enforcement activities simply because you want to keep the courthouse open to the public in most situations, and to have enforcement activities at courthouses would have a chilling effect on access to justice. Another Homeland Security directive issued in the past weeks follows through on one of President Trump's executive orders, signed also in recent weeks, that seeks to terminate all quote-unquote categorical parole programs that are contrary to the policies of the United States. This includes parole programs, what they call humanitarian parole programs, for nationals of countries like Nicaragua, Cuba, Haiti, and Venezuela. One pastor responding, quote, theologically we'll stand our ground against the government. An unjust law is no law at all. These are sacred spaces, said one pastor to the Associated Press. How are we to interpret, how are we to respond to these new directives from the government, the federal government, Department of Homeland Security, the White House, addressing arrests, immigration enforcement, and places of worship, among other places, schools, hospitals? Though many of the issues raised are not new, today we seem to be facing different challenges. Some churches, some congregations are investigating whether they should or should not be places of sanctuary to undocumented aliens or others in desperate situations. Many congregations are consulting with legal counsel, seeking to be more aware of federal, state, and local laws concerning immigration and the role of law enforcement. Though the word sanctuary doesn't appear in the code, it's not a legal term per se. A sanctuary church is one that intentionally ministers to the undocumented community. It could include providing physical shelter for those facing hardship, even deportation. What should a congregation do? How should a congregation respond? If a congregation determines that providing sanctuary is consistent with its theology, its ministry, there are numerous practical and legal issues to consider. First, sanctuary is not really, as I said a moment ago, a legally recognized designation. And this designation of sanctuary church does not prevent immigration agents or even other government officials from entering a church to question, arrest, or detain undocumented persons. It raises the question, does the free exercise of religion permit a church to provide sanctuary as one of its ministries? The answer is, as so many answers in the law are, is it depends, maybe. In the 1980s, federal courts rejected defenses based upon the Free Exercise Clause in several cases where religiously motivated persons were convicted of violating immigration statutes. In 1993, the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act was enacted, but has not yet been asserted as a defense in the immigration context. So what types of laws might a church possibly violate if it offers sanctuary to undocumented immigrants? First, federal law prohibits the concealing, harboring, shielding, from detection, or transporting of undocumented persons when such action aids their unlawful stay in the country. In addition, state or local laws may penalize additional activities related to providing care for undocumented persons. Churches may want to consult an attorney to explore if their ministry to the undocumented might or might not violate local, state, or federal laws. So how might a church provide sanctuary to the undocumented without violating federal, state, or local law? Well, let's start with federal law. Federal appellate courts have differing interpretations about what harboring means in the context of immigration laws. One appellate court has held that harboring includes simply providing shelter, while another has held that harboring necessarily includes an element of intent to hide or evade immigration authorities. In fact, some churches actually announce it in their public announcements that they are providing shelter for undocumented persons. They do this in efforts of possibly providing a defense that they are neither hiding immigrants nor helping them evade immigration authorities. Interestingly, it may be that a public announcement for some churches, some ministries, might provide a defense in some jurisdictions, but it may not protect churches from prosecution in other jurisdictions, and may even make things more difficult for the undocumented immigrants. Besides offering sanctuary, what some might call harboring undocumented immigrants, how else could a church minister to undocumented persons and their families in the United States? If a church is aware that there are undocumented persons in its membership, in its congregation, or wants to specifically reach out to the undocumented community, there are many options that maybe fall short of providing shelter. For example, a church can open membership or participation in church ministries to all, regardless of immigration status. A church can create opportunities for the church to meet the unique challenges faced by undocumented immigrants and their families, including a constant fear of forced family separation. Churches can become an accredited organization, an accredited service provider. The U.S. Department of Justice can actually recognize churches and ministries as accredited, recognized service providers to help undocumented persons navigate the immigration system. Simply search online for Department of Justice recognition and accreditation. You're tuned in to the Religious Liberty Report, this third week of February, 2025, talking about the undocumented. How can churches minister in this time to the undocumented amongst us? Can churches offer sanctuary to illegal aliens? What is most important to keep in mind if your church wants to become a quote-unquote sanctuary church? First, consult a local attorney familiar with federal immigration law and related immigration laws at the state and local level. Your church may also want to learn what services may be needed in your community by reaching out to other community groups. If your church is providing shelter to undocumented immigrants, inform the immigrants that staying at the church does not give any special legal protection against detention or deportation. And very importantly, ensure that your staff, your church members, and other volunteers involved in sheltering or transporting the undocumented immigrants are properly trained and aware of the potential legal consequences. On the Religious Liberty Report, here today reporting on illegal immigrants and churches. The day after President Donald Trump took office, the Department of Homeland Security issued a directive allowing Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Customs and Border Protection agents to arrest illegal immigrants in sensitive areas, including churches and schools. This directive under President Trump rescinds an earlier policy from 2011 that required agents to seek higher level approval before arresting persons in quote-unquote sensitive locations such as churches, schools, hospitals. How are we to respond to these changes? How are we to minister to the undocumented amongst us? One lawyer, Liberty Counsel founder and chairman Matt Staver, said, quote, "Places of worship are for worship and not sanctuaries for illegal activity or for harboring people engaged in illegal activity. Fugitives or criminals are not immune from the law merely because they enter a place of worship." Attorney Matt Staver went on to say, "To suggest otherwise makes no sense and would open the door to lawlessness, to chaos." He emphasized that this is not a matter of religious freedom, because there is no right to openly violate the law, to disobey law enforcement. Others say that the tradition of affording sanctuary in sacred spaces dates back to ancient times across many cultures. For example, in ancient Greece, religious shrines were considered safe spaces for those who were persecuted or for mistreated slaves, debtors, political offenders. Temples were regarded as sanctuaries. Nobody could be removed from a temple by force. The ancient Romans likewise considered particular sacred spaces as sanctuaries where fugitives could be safe from apprehension. And of course, our Bible in the Old Testament references the ancient tradition of altar sanctuary in what is referred to as cities of refuge. The Old Testament lists six towns in the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Judah that offered sanctuary to allow for claims of asylum. The Bible names six cities of refuge. They are Golan, Ramoth, Bozar, Kadesh, Shechem, and Hebron. In the 1980s, a sanctuary movement developed in the United States, mostly in response to refugees fleeing war-torn Central America. Many who participated in the sanctuary movement of the 1980s viewed their work as a humanitarian, helping those facing hardship, those who had crossed Central America seeking asylum in the United States. In the year 2007, a movement began known as the New Sanctuary Movement, in response to failed efforts at immigration reform. Many participating congregations began to provide physical sanctuary to those seeking asylum, to unauthorized immigrants fleeing deportation. One census has it at over 800 congregations in the United States that are offering some form of sanctuary services. Immigration authorities have long had a policy of refraining from entering houses of worship in pursuit of those claiming sanctuary there. Even though they have the right to do so, they've refrained or held back from entering houses of worship. Even when providing physical sanctuary may have been in violation of the law. Sanctuary workers, on the other hand, claim that as long as they are open about what they're doing, they are not violating the law. Courts have supported both views of sanctuary workers and sanctuary churches. So the state of the law remains somewhat uncertain. U.S. law does not currently recognize the right of sanctuary for unauthorized immigrants in sacred places. Even though there are deep roots to the right of sanctuary in ancient history. The majority of federal courts have recently considered the issue and have held that in order to be found to be violating federal law, what they call the harboring provision, an individual must engage in conduct that is intended to help the unauthorized immigrant avoid detection by immigration authorities. However, some courts have held that the intent to help the unauthorized immigrant avoid detection is not required. The law is unclear. You're tuned into the Religious Liberty Report, discussing the law on sanctuary churches, on undocumented immigrants and how to minister to them under the law. For hundreds of years, societies have recognized a right of sanctuary in sacred spaces. In spite of a clear right in the United States, religious communities have a long history of providing sanctuary for humanitarian reasons and for reasons of social justice. Churches seeking to provide humanitarian assistance, maybe even wanting to publicize the need for immigration reform. Their actions often taken based on sincerely held religious beliefs. We know that religious communities, churches, places of worship, enjoy a special status under the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Americans have long placed a particular value on the principles of religious freedom and the separation of church and state. But the history and the tradition of providing sanctuary in sacred spaces has not been recognized by federal regulation and will not prevent federal officers from enforcing immigration laws in our churches and other sacred spaces. Turning the page on the Religious Liberty Report, a man describes being swallowed by a whale. Kayaker Adrian Simancas noticed that after he had been eaten by a whale, that he had felt a slimy texture brush his face. It seems that 23-year-old Adrian Simancas had been swallowed by a whale or some sort of orca or sea monster, he says, when reporting to BBC. The Venezuelan kayaker had been paddling through the Strait of Magellan off Chile's Patagonian coast with his father when he felt something hit him from behind. He says that he closed his eyes, and when he opened them again, he realized he was inside the mouth of a whale. Adrian said that he felt a slimy texture brush his face. He said he had to think about what to do next. But within seconds, Adrian started to feel as he was again rising towards the surface, and he had realized that the whale had spit him out. Adrian Simancas, a Venezuelan kayaker off the coast of Chile's Patagonian coast, swallowed and then spit out again by a whale. Turning to the last page of the report for this third week of February 2025, one article asks the question, what role should religion play in a free society? More and more people today are saying none. Religion should not play any role in a free society. But that would not have been the answer of the founders of the United States, the men and women who fought the American Revolution and wrote this country's Constitution. To them, the issue of religion and freedom were inextricably linked. You couldn't have freedom without religion. In fact, the political philosophy of the founders necessitated a divine foundation. Thomas Jefferson made this clear in the Declaration of Independence when he wrote that all men are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. The purpose of government, Jefferson said, and its leaders was to not bestow rights, grant rights, give rights. Rather, it was to protect those rights that had already been given upon humans by God. But government isn't enough for a free society. A moral people must also be present for there to be a moral free society. A people moral enough to police themselves. Virtue, morality, George Washington said, is a necessary spring of popular government. Thus, for the founders of this great nation, liberty was not just the ability to do what you wanted. It came with moral demands and boundaries. They all accepted the rule of life, expressed by Benjamin Franklin. Nothing brings more pain than too much pleasure. Nothing more bondage than too much liberty. You're tuned into the Religious Liberty Report. Thank you for joining me on this week's report, where we covered important issues regarding federal law, state and local law, as to how churches can minister to undocumented aliens. And now, a message from one of our friends at South Florida Bible College and Theological Seminary. Whether you're looking to lead in business, counsel with compassion, run a church, or enrich your spiritual life, their new programs are designed just for you. Introducing their Master's in Business Administration, their Master's in Mental Health Counseling, and their Doctorate degree in Ministry. You can aim high with a degree that sets you apart. At South Florida Bible College and Theological Seminary, offering undergraduate, graduate, and doctoral degrees. Degree programs available online or on campus. Over 20 total programs. Explore their diverse range of programs in ministry, theology, business, counseling, from associate to doctoral levels. Programs available both on campus and online. As one of the top 10 most affordable Bible colleges in the United States, South Florida Bible College provides quality education at an affordable price. And with scholarships just a click away, nothing should stop you from pursuing your dreams at South Florida Bible College and Theological Seminary. Fully accredited and ready to serve you, visit them online at sfbc.edu to learn more and apply today. Jesus never promised his followers an easy path. In fact, he told his disciples that the world would hate them. He sent them out as sheep among wolves. Jesus' words came true in the lives of his apostles, and they're still coming true today in the lives of his followers around the world. Until next time, God bless you, and God bless America.
Thank you for tuning in to the Religious Liberty Report, a broadcast intended to help equip churches.